Emmanuel and I are very close. He knows me as his own son. I consider it a great privilege to be a student at the School of Preaching here. I often wonder why it is that it's me who is here, and I never will take it for granted or fail to appreciate what it means to be a student going through the School of Preaching. Now, several times today, it was joked from the pulpit here that we were to sympathize with the students, and indeed, it's an intense study, but it goes without saying that it's greatly rewarding. I wouldn't trade it for anything, and I know as time goes on, more years pass, I'll be able to say the same with even more belief in that. One of the things that I've learned at the School of Preaching so far, as we go through classes and some of the men that we have the privilege of sitting at their feet teach us about preaching, is that the gospel, Jesus Christ and his doctrine, are not confusing. They're not difficult to understand for one who puts forth the effort to understand them. Rather, it can be quite simple what it means to be a Christian, to learn the way of Jesus Christ, and what it means to be a follower of him. It was said earlier today that indeed there are some things that are difficult to understand in the Bible. Paul wrote some things that were difficult to understand. But far outweighing that are all the things that are just outright simple about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And what I hope to do, one of the things I hope to do tonight, is to convey to you that Jesus being the way to eternal life is a simple concept to understand that many people have made difficult. Many have made it difficult. If you were to go out into your automobile right now and to pull out of the driveway, whether you went east or west or north or south, inevitably you would run into various groups of religious people, even those who claim to be Christians, who would promote and would tell you that there was a certain way in which you're to be saved. Now, some would say, however, that belief alone may save you, that if you just trust in God, he will save you. Others will say that God's grace will save you, and there's nothing that you can do to contribute to your salvation. Yet others believe that you're saved by works of merit, that if you perform so many righteous deeds, you'll earn your way into heaven. And then here we are, tucked away in the midst of this, saying that both the grace of God and your contribution are essential to your salvation, that we must respond to God's grace. Now, amidst all these different things that are purported, and that's just to name a few, amidst all the ways that people may tell us, this is what you need to do to be saved, and yet they all contradict each other, is there one right way that we can know how to be saved? Is there one right way? I'll tell you right up front the answer to that question. Yes, there is, because Jesus Christ has told us there is one way. As was quoted earlier today again, and I suppose it'll be quoted many times throughout this lectureship, John 14:6, when Thomas asked him, "How can we know the way?" He responded, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me." So John also writes in his epistle, in 2 John verse 9, he says, "Whosoever transgresseth and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ, hath not God. And he that abideth in the doctrine of Christ hath both the Father and the Son." So here we learn that Jesus is the way, and also his doctrine is the way. Jesus and his doctrine are hand in hand. The things that Jesus teaches represent who he is and what he wants to tell us. So to understand the way is to obey Jesus Christ and accept him for who he is, the Son of God, and to follow his doctrine. That is the way in which we're to be saved. Why are there then so many different groups? In Knox County, Ohio, where I lived before I came here, I remember learning from the census at the city court that there were 287 different religious bodies in just one county alone in Central Ohio. That profounded me. I was taken by that. I couldn't have dreamed there were that many. But there were that many, and why is that the case? Well, there are two reasons why that's the case. Because of unbelief and because of disobedience. Those two reasons alone are the result in much of the confusion that goes on in religion today that we look around us and see. Many people are frustrated when we try to take them the gospel because they're confused with all that is represented by all the religious bodies around us. And everybody's saying something different about how we're to be saved. But yet, Jesus said there is a way, and that way was Himself. And there is a way that's right for a man to follow and to be saved. In John 3:16, we learn that that way is the only begotten Son of God, whom God gave to us, that if we believe on Him, we should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's the way we're to follow. The way I want to point out to you in the next few minutes has several things that I'd like to convey. First of all, it is singular. The way is singular. Jesus claims that there's only one way, and we'll take a look at that. The second thing I want to note is that the way is straight. That is S-T-R-A-I-T, not G-H-T, as straight as in a line, but straight, having boundaries in which we must follow. And the third thing is that the way is settled. It's settled for all men at all times in any generation that comes along. Let's look at the way being singular. Now, when Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," here's the first simple part of the gospel plan. He didn't say, "I am one of the ways in which leads to heaven." He didn't say, "Someone else is the way." He said, "I am the way." There's only one way. It's singular. Very simple. Anyone who knows English grammar at all can see that there's only one way. Now, He hasn't authored more than one way either. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 9 and chapter 12 and verse 2, we learn that Jesus is the author and the finisher of our faith. He is the author in that everything was brought into being through Him, including the plan of salvation. And He is the finisher in that through Christ, when He comes again to receive us unto Him, will be the finisher of our faith. He's the author and the finisher. Now, being the author, He has not given more than one plan of salvation. There's only one plan in which He's given us. And He claims to be the author of it. If you were to take, for example, a Shakespearean sonnet, William Shakespeare is the author. But if you were to take that sonnet, one of those sonnets, and you were to just change a couple words in that sonnet, or you were to take from that sonnet a couple words and replace them with a couple you'd like to see in there, could you hand that sonnet to someone else and say, "Read this. This is a Shakespearean sonnet," and have that accurately represent what William Shakespeare wished to convey to his readers? Or have you not changed the authorship of that sonnet by you adding into it something you'd like to have seen in there? By altering or just replacing a word or two, William Shakespeare is no longer the author of that sonnet. You become the author of that sonnet. Therefore, if we change the plan or the way that Christ has given us, we become the author of that plan. Jesus is no longer the author of that one way, for you have just created a new way. He has not authored more than one way of righteous living. His way is absolute. It's the only right way. Righteousness is absolute truth. In 1 Corinthians 14:33, we read that God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints. So we see here that He has authored one way of righteous living, and it's not confusing, and that we are to hold on to that one way. There's only one course that's been set out for us to follow as well. There's only one course we're to follow. It's often been said that there are many roads leading to the same place. Our religious neighbors tell us that. Once we try to share with them the truth, and it impedes upon what they have been taught, or it contradicts what they believe to be the truth or the way, they automatically will say, and this will solve the problem for them, in that there are many roads leading to the same place. We're all going to the same place. You claim Jesus to be your Savior. I claim Jesus to be my Savior. You just go about it your way, and I'll go about it my way, and we'll meet in heaven. But is that the truth? I believe Jesus dealt with that mindset in Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23, when he said, "Not everyone who comes to me and says, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father." You see, there are going to be many people that have a chagrined face at the judgment, a look of surprise, a drop jaw, when he tells them, "Depart from me, I never knew you." And there are going to be many who say, "But didn't I claim you as my Savior? And didn't I do certain works that were sanctioned by you, that you told me to do?" But he'll say, "Depart from me, because you didn't wholly follow my way. You were sidetracked halfway down the path. And you added in your own way to mine, which no longer was my way." That will be the surprise of many if we're not careful. There are not different roads leading to the same place. Christ has prepared for us the only way to get to heaven. In Acts chapter 4 and verse 12, we read, "Nor is there salvation in any other, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we may be saved." And any time one adds to or takes away from the New Testament, which is the authority of Jesus Christ and his words, we add to that way, creating a new way. It's not simply an addition, it's a replacement. When we take away from that word, we are creating a new way. It's not simply just a subtraction, it's creating a new way. Whenever we add to or take away, man-made methods such as adding to or taking away from that one way do not and cannot save us. They cannot save us. If we follow this one way given to us by the one author, this only way that's been sanctioned by Christ and authorized by him, that is, being himself as the way, there's only going to be one outcome. If we all follow the way of the New Testament, we're all going to be of one mind, of one accord, having the same judgments, no matter where we're from, who we are, how old we are, male or female. If we study the Bible in this way and view Jesus as that one way and come to it with an open mind and an open heart, we'll come to the same conclusions. And it will come to the one way that he wants us to know. The Bible only, left alone by itself, makes Christians only. If Jesus is the way, again, to say that there is more than one way is to say that there's more than one Jesus. Now let's reason together for a minute. Paul states in his letter, first letter to the Corinthians, an illustration that is describing the relationship of Christ to his people. And he uses the illustration of a body, a very simple illustration. He said that Christ is the head and we are the body. Now, let me ask you, if Jesus said, "I am the way," and we say that there is more than one way in which you are to get to heaven, and that it is okay to have separate groups of people believing separate things, do you not have one head with many different bodies coming off of it? You've created a distorted monster. And if we say that there is more than one way, that is to say that Jesus, there is more than one Jesus, because he said, "I am the way." So either way you look at it, you have a head, one head with many bodies, or you have one body of people in which they say we're all unified, but you have many heads. And Paul said, "Is Christ divided?" Whenever we create new ways, we also say there is more than one Jesus by which you may be saved, because he said, "I am the way." And if there's only one way, then there's only one Christ. If we're going to create two ways, then there's two Christs. If we're going to create three or more, then there's just that many more Jesuses by which we may be saved. And that's just how silly it can become if we start to say there's more than one way in which we can follow. The second thing I want to notice is that the way is straight. I mentioned before in the introduction that straight is not the idea of straight as in a line, but rather S-T-R-A-I-T, straight as in having boundaries or being confined. We need to enter through the gate, that is the gate that's mentioned in Matthew 7:14, when Jesus said, "Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." This is the gate that we're to enter into. Jesus describes himself in John chapter 10 as being the door. He describes us as being the sheep. Now, what he means there is in the days in his day, the shepherds would take the sheep out into the field, and they would gather the sheep at night in order to keep them safe and to keep an eye over them. They would gather them into a sheepfold, which was a large area that was fenced in by stones. And there was an entrance into that sheepfold. And Jesus, using this illustration, wanted us to see that he is the gate or the door by through which the sheep will enter in and out. And he knows who his sheep are, and he knows where they are, whether they're in the fold of safety or whether they're in the fold of danger. But what I want us to know about this is, again, if we say that there is more than one way by which you can be saved, and that there are many different roads leading to heaven, then we're to take his illustration and say, well, Jesus, since you are the door to the sheepfold, there must be 100 or more doors by which you may enter into that sheepfold. He said, "I am the door to this gate, to this opening," and the shepherd would lay in front of that, and he would know who came in and out. But if we were to say that there is more than one way or more than one entrance into that fold of safety, we're to say that there's doors all the way around that sheepfold by which they can enter in. Well, Jesus said, "I'm only at one door, the door that you come in and out." So we cannot make more doors to that sheepfold by saying there's more than one way to enter into the fold of safety. The second thing I want to notice about the way being straight is that it's narrow. The New King James uses the word difficult to describe this way. It's narrow. It's something that you just don't stumble onto. You must seek it out, and you must look for it to find it. You don't just stumble into a narrow gate. And you know, once you're in that narrow gate, you can't just stumble on into heaven, because there are boundaries to this straight gate that we must stay in. It's difficult to walk this path, to follow this way, because there are obstacles in the way. These obstacles are not impossible to overcome. God has given us the way over the obstacles. If there were not obstacles to overcome, then why did Jesus, in speaking to the seven churches in Asia in the book of Revelation, at the end of each letter say, "To he who overcomes, I will have your name written on a white stone. To he who overcomes, you will be given white raiment to wear. To he who overcomes, I will give you the right to sit on my throne with me," and etc., etc. There are things that we must overcome in following this way. You know, there are obstacles that cover the entire path, but if we are to try to get around those obstacles, then we must step outside the boundaries to get around them. And we can't do that and get to the end point, which is heaven, by going outside the boundaries, because we'll be on a road that does not lead to heaven. We'll be on a different path. Therefore, we must stay on that path, and we must put our trust in God to tell us how to overcome those obstacles in life that come our way. The hard thing about this is that we must put our trust in God's ways and not our own ways. That's the difficult part. That's why it's a struggle sometimes, is that because we have to trust in God and not ourselves. But he tells us how to overcome them obstacles, and he'll allow us to reach the end. Also, John, in 1 John 5:3, tells us that the way is not grievous. God's commandments, the commandments of Jesus Christ, are not grievous. Now think on that for a second. There are obstacles in the path. The way is difficult, yes. There are things that Christians have to endure that the world does not, yes. But are they grievous? How many people do you know that have been Christians for 40 or 50 years, that have been faithful to God and to Christ, have you heard say, "I regret it"? How many trials have they went through in their day? They could sit down with you and tell you endless stories endless stories of how they overcame obstacles in their faith and kept faithful to God and were rewarded for it. There is a way that is rewarding. In Hebrews 11:6, we read, "For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those that, of them that diligently seek him." And in 2 Timothy 4:7 and 8, Paul writes, "I have fought a good fight. I've finished my course, and I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. And not to me only, but to all those who love his appearing." That's the reward we're striving for. That's the positive motivation that we have to walk this way and to stay within the boundaries of it. Though the way is difficult, it does not mean that it's not worth it. The third thing I want to mention about the way is that it's settled in heaven forever. The psalmist tells us this. In Psalm 119, verse 89, we read, "Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven." Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. It shall not change. And Jesus reiterates this in Matthew 24 when he said, "My word shall last forever." In paraphrasing that, "It shall always stand. It will not be destroyed." This includes the way that he has given us. The very Creator who spoke into existence, the creation around us, and who created man from the dust of the earth, has also spoken and given us a way by which we must be saved. Now, isn't it rather arrogant to think that we can take that way and alter it to how we want it to be? The same God that spoke into existence the awesome things around us, your very being, we're not to change it. Those who don't like the way cannot create or change it or make their own way. It's not established according to what seems right to a man. You know, the wise man in Proverbs 14:12 tells us there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is destruction. And we must base the way upon knowledge, and that knowledge has been given to us in the New Testament. The way doesn't change with each generation. If the way is like Jesus Christ, then it's stable, and it's unchanging. In Hebrews 10:20, we read that it's a living way, a new and living way, which he consecrated for us. That means that it doesn't die with each generation, with cultural changes that come about, with being in the era of enlightenment as we're in, and intelligence and knowledge and science that we're in. The way does not change through all these things. It does not die because it's for man. It's not for the American culture. It's not for today's knowledge. It's for human beings, and human beings will not change. Therefore, the way is good for all and every generation. The one who obeys the words of Christ is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. Though things may come against him, the storms and the winds, and beat against him, if he holds fast to this way of Jesus Christ, he'll stand. If he does not, if he is a compromiser, or if he does not hold faithful to the teachings of Christ, it's like one who builds his house on the sand. Though the winds come and the rain beats down upon him, and he'll sink, because he hasn't built his house upon this way that is settled in heaven forever. We cannot be a compromiser. So we've learned that Jesus is the way, and there's only one way. And Jesus' way is straight. That is, it can be difficult to follow at times. Nevertheless, it's worth it. It's rewarding to us if we hold fast to it. All can follow the way into heaven. God would that all men be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth. And also that way is settled in heaven. You know, it's our responsibility as Christians and as the church to preserve this way. Paul said the gospel has been entrusted to us. God expects us to be good stewards of this gospel. The question we need to ask ourselves is, are we preserving that way? When you go out and teach another, and they call you a five-stepper, just smile and ask them to show you three or four even, or seven or eight, something other than five. If they call you conservative, you know, I like that accusation myself. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. but simply tell them you're preservative. If someone tells you you're arrogant because you promote only one way, just smile and realize that you're probably teaching the truth and doing your job. But keep teaching it. It's our responsibility to preserve it. We need to learn it. Every generation needs to learn it. We need to walk in it, and we need to teach it. That's our responsibility in preserving this one way of Jesus Christ. Help us preserve that. Teach it to your children and teach them how to preserve it in the future so the church can stand forever until Christ comes again. Thank you.